The news of the U.S.-Iran deal coincides with world leaders meeting this week in France for the annual G7 summit. Among their responses, one comment stood out. "We stand ready," Italian Prime Minister Giorgia Meloni said, "together with our partners and without prejudice to the necessary authorization from Parliament to contribute to an international naval presence to support the full reopening of the Strait of Hormuz." The deal does not include a durable framework for ending the war, including mechanisms to regulate Iran's nuclear ambitions. But Ms. Meloni's nod to the authority of democratic institutions underscores that diplomacy, like governance, derives legitimacy through accountability and the rule of law. The Monitor's Scott Peterson has made 45 trips to the Islamic Republic over the years. In conversations during a newsroom stop-by on Monday, he sized up the task at hand in final negotiations this week. Here's an excerpt.
The optics of the Memorandum of Understanding are certainly meant to look like this war is over. And of course, there's a lot of time between now and Friday when spoilers or others could get in the way. We've had deals fall through on far less time than that, even just hours. But it does seem that both sides want to stop firing at each other. This is the Americans and the Iranians especially. The Israelis feel like they have some work still to do in places like Lebanon and elsewhere. A ceasefire in Lebanon is actually part of this MOU. But again, we don't actually know all the details. But what we do know is that it seems that all the critical issues that this war was supposedly fought over, which is like containing and restricting Iran's nuclear program, its missile arsenal, its support for proxy forces in the Middle East, all these things have not been dealt with. They have not been resolved. They are meant to be put forward into the 60-day window during which they will be negotiated. And this is what has always been the sticking point in these kind of talks.
It's Tuesday, June 16th. This is the Monitor Daily Podcast. Good morning. I'm Kurt Schillinger. First, our curation of news briefs from our writers around the world. Many of these are developing stories. Find the latest updates at csmonitor.com/newsbriefs or on our app. Foxcore announced it's buying Roku. Under the $22 billion deal, Fox will acquire Roku's smart TV business as well as its streaming platform, which reaches over 100 million households. It positions Fox, which already owns the Tubi streaming channel, to become the third largest streaming business in the United States. A press release announcing the deal touted Fox's ability to be at the intersection of streaming and live sports coverage. Regulators and shareholders for both companies still need to approve the deal, expected to close next year with a valuation of $160 a share. In a referendum, Switzerland opposed capping its population numbers. Swiss voters have rejected a proposal to cap the country's population at 10 million by 2050. The tally showed nearly 55% voting against a measure backed by the right-wing Swiss People's Party. Supporters argued immigration was putting growing pressure on housing, transport, and public services. Critics warned the cap could worsen labor shortages and threaten Switzerland's accords with the European Union on free movement. Also, Cape Verde delivered the first surprise of the 2026 World Cup. European soccer champion Spain was held to a 0-0 draw by Cape Verde in a World Cup game in Atlanta on Monday. Cape Verde, a 10-island African nation of about 600,000 people, was making its debut on the fifth day of the World Cup against one of the highest-rated teams. Spain dominated the game but couldn't put the ball past Cape Verde's goalkeeper. Even the introduction of Spanish teen superstar Lamine Yamal failed to break the tie with the Blue Sharks, as the Cape Verdean team is known. Cape Verde's next game is against Uruguay on Sunday. Now, today's Monitor stories. As always, you can go to csmonitor.com or our app for the latest news. A U.S.-Iran ceasefire deal leaves many Israelis feeling vulnerable and abandoned by their most important ally. They expressed concerns for Israel's security and freedom of action against its enemies. And some criticized Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu for failing to achieve his war aims. Dina Kraft reports from Washington for The Monitor. The global economy was the clear loser from the U.S.-Israeli conflict with Iran as oil prices surged. The expected peace deal would reopen the Strait of Hormuz, though a full restoration of oil flows could take months. Laurent Belsey reports for The Monitor. A former two-time Kansas mayor is facing deportation. Some supporters of President Donald Trump are wrestling with the implications of immigration enforcement that is broader, they say, than what they voted for or expected. Sarah Matusik reports from Coldwater, Kansas, for The Monitor. A sanctions regime is only as good as its enforcement, experts say. With the United States showing erratic commitment to sanctioning Russia, among others, questions have emerged about whether the line can be held without Washington. Dominique Sogel reports from Basel, Switzerland, for The Monitor. With seafood difficult to secure in the Sahrawi refugee camps in Algeria, an unusual endeavor was launched 7 years ago. At a farm within the camps, farmers raise red and black tilapia in ponds that hold about 48,000 fish. To view this photo essay in full, visit csmonitor.com/daily. Contributors Gianni Esposito and Marta Saiz report from Tindouf Province, Algeria, for The Monitor. Now, commentary from The Monitor's editorial board on how Pakistan proved its mediation skills. It's been more than 100 days since the United States and Israel launched their first wave of attacks against Iran. With Iran and the U.S. now agreeing to sign a memorandum of understanding on Friday, it will likely be another 60 days before a conclusive end to the war is in sight. Given the thorny issues between the two countries, especially the still unsettled matter of Iran's nuclear enrichment program, finalizing a peace deal in the 60-day ceasefire window is a considerable challenge. If the envisioned ceasefire holds and oil shipments move smoothly through the Strait of Hormuz, a longer period to work out all the details might not be a bad thing for what one analyst described as the slow institutional work of conflict transformation. Such work requires building sufficient trust among those who represent opposing national interests, as well as the mediators bringing them together, so they can hammer out concessions and agreements that have staying power. This may require reconciling different understandings of peace, ranging from the absence of conflict to a more robust coexistence, if not respect, among former warring parties. Pakistan, the key intermediary that has helped bring the U.S. and Iran together in Geneva this week, is uniquely positioned, geographically, diplomatically, and culturally, to continue supporting this process. In doing so, it's following a path set by other middle powers in the region that have also served as interlocutors for the U.S. with Iran, such as Oman and Qatar. Diplomatic access, not military power, is the key to mediation, according to Saima Afzal, a researcher at Justus Liebig University in Germany. States with relationships across the competing camps increasingly find opportunities to influence outcomes that larger powers struggle to manage directly, she wrote last week in Asia Times. Pakistan and the Gulf states, as well as Iran, also share an approach to conflict resolution rooted in their common cultural and Islamic heritage. It's a view that emphasizes reconciliation and restoration of partnerships, according to Nikolai Muladinov, an experienced coordinator for Mideast peace issues. In contrast to the more Western focus of swiftly identifying problems and executing interventions, the Gulf approach significantly emphasizes the slow and careful building of trust and rapport, he wrote in a 2024 analysis for the Washington Institute. A Detailed Guide to Incorporating Islamic Principles into Peacemaking, published in 2024 by the London School of Economics, highlights the duty to hold widespread consultations and accept treaties as binding. Diversity of opinions is seen as a blessing rather than a negative characteristic, it noted, and the concept of justice is comprehensive and non-discriminatory, akin to Western notions of fairness or equity. The need for more nuanced forms of peacemaking has, if anything, become more urgent, the report said. With its network of regional and international relationships, Pakistan is showing how a relatively modest geopolitical power can apply soft power to peacemaking. The stories you just heard are from today's newsletter. Find these stories and more at csmonitor.com or on our app. For more Monitor podcasts, go to csmonitor.com/podcasts. For other audio offerings from our parent organization, go to christianscience.com/audio. Today's Christian Science Spiritual Perspective contributor shares how we can look to our divine parent for guidance and provision that doesn't fail. Find the full column at csmonitor.com/csperspective. Thanks to today's audio production team, Mackenzie Farkas, Alyssa Britton, and Donald Keough.
This podcast is produced by the Christian Science Monitor in Boston, Massachusetts, USA. Copyright 2026.